92.7 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. It's a Thursday. Keep Dr. Bill pretty close to us here over the next week or so. We always do this time of year, but he's talking about the possibility, not sure thing, not run for your lives. Yeah, he doesn't hype, but the possibility of having two tropical systems in the Gulf of Mexico at the same time next week.
Unbelievable.
It is. I know that I don't remember it ever happening, and Dr. Bill said he was trying to remember. He said he didn't think it had happened the last couple decades. So maybe somewhere further back, but we'll talk to him more about that throughout the day. Tomorrow, we've got the weekend ahead. He said this is like maybe a Tuesday, Wednesday thing for next week, so we'll talk more about that. All right, let's do this. It is a Thursday, and we check in with our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. Lots to talk about with Robert. Good morning.
Morning, Sean. Good morning, Dalton. How you guys doing today?
I think I'm good. It's Thursday, man, so I'm doing fine. A lot of stuff to talk about here, and you had sent me a note here to talk about the Postal Service and absentee versus mail-in voting. Let's start there. I've talked a whole bunch about it this week, and heck, I have been talking about it since back in April. But yeah, this week has been probably the peak of it.
Yeah, so let's start with the Postal Service. So this is actually interesting. So there had been a movement afoot under the umbrella of the new Postmaster General to do some cost-cutting initiatives, right? Mm-hmm. So things like reducing the amount of overtime, reducing some of the automated sorting machines, and I believe the last thing was the removal of some mailboxes. And I thought interesting was y'all's reaction to that whole process with the narrative that said that the community was basically overreacting to that and trying to make it nefarious when it was something that was not.
Yeah.
And I was really interested in understanding why it was that you guys felt that way.
I think I've explained it because we went down factually. A couple things here. Let's start off the sorting machine discussion. Mm-hmm. That Dalton pointed out on Monday, the statistics on the sorting machines that were decommissioned, I think 20 in the country, 18, something like that?
Yeah, I think right around 20, okay. According to that Vice article.
Those were, from Vice News. They said those were used to sort smaller mail, the kind of mail that they don't see as much of. Postcards, small letters. We can lament that the letter writing is a thing of the past, but they didn't use those. Not the size that would sort a mail-in ballot. Okay, so that was being done. And it's being reported as nefarious. They're taking down these sorting machines when they don't apply to ballots at all. So that on that front, reducing overtime.
But the two things are actually related together, right? So if you take away a piece of equipment that increases efficiency in one area, invariably that's going to require resources that can address requirements in another area as well.
Well, it's perspective that when I read the story from Vice and look at it, it's because the demand wasn't there for that piece of equipment, and to run that piece of equipment wasn't needed because of the changing. We're talking about the post office changing with the times, right? And being
right.
I mean, you had the stat that in certain parts of the post office job and delivery that they're tied into having to do, as they go do that delivery, they're losing between $1.50 and like $3. Like every time they go do the thing, that delivery is losing money.
That's true.
That is shaking my head, face palm thing, going, my gosh, what are we doing here? So the efficiencies that DeJoy is putting in, these are things to help the post office move on, right? And be able to keep things afloat there. I mean, what's the last loan they got? Was it 50 billion? They got for the post office, or $10 billion. I'm sorry, $10 billion.
It was a nice, healthy chunk of change.
Yeah, $10 billion. So he's trying to get them efficient. I know that the discussion of overtime, what that was costing the Postal Service, was part of this discussion. So DeJoy's coming in there trying to put efficiencies in the system, and it seems like these things that I believe would be happening anyway, they're part of the process, are now being tied politically as some attempt for President Trump to block people from doing mail-in voting. Do you believe, I'll turn around here and ask you the question, do you believe that there's a plan right now to prevent people from getting their right to vote by doing things to the post office?
I don't think that it's a plan, in the sense that it was written down in a sheet of paper and it had an objective that needed to be done by a certain date. But I do want to go back and talk a little bit about the post office because I'm actually setting up a conversation that we'll have in our sequence of the morning discussion. So the first thing is, if you looked at the post office, operating as a business. Then you would say, if you've come in as a new executive and you're assessing the landscape and see some opportunities to reduce expenses, primarily expenses associated with labor, then you would look at the actions that he's taken and you'd say, you know what, that's kind of reasonable, right? You would do that in any business that you go to. However, the post office isn't a business. The post office is a department, right? And
quasi,
the post office, if memory serves me correctly, is one of the things that is required by the Constitution, postal services and postal routes. And, you know, there's a little bit of a box in the sense that if you're running a business, you would not send a first-class mail piece from Alaska to Alabama at the same cost that you would send it from Mobile to Baldwin County. Right. And so you have to keep in mind that it is truly a function of government. And as is the case with a number of departments throughout the government, sure, you can do things to try to make it a little bit more efficient and to make it better. But every single one of those actions ultimately has a consequence.
How much
and
of this?
So,
okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so what I was saying was it's inherent and the actions that are being taken, given the time frame, that there is ultimately going to be a negative impact of all of those actions. And so whether you're talking about the decrease in overtime, whether you're talking about the removal of machines that automatically process small pieces as opposed to machines that process big pieces, that the whole system's going to slow down. And the impact is simply a given. And if it wasn't potentially problematic, then he never would have reversed course to say that the actions that were planned to be taken wouldn't be taken until after the election.
Yeah, I think they reversed course because of the political winds out there. I think politics did come into play because Democrats were successful at making this seem nefarious, and the president doesn't want to deal with that going into November. But we go back to the cost here. There's seven different labor unions that are involved in folks in the post office. How you're going to get agreement there? I mean, things are so entrenched, and it is a government agency, but things are so entrenched. If you're talking about, because if I'm working for the post office and I see this guy's coming in and I could not have as big a check, you know, as I got last month or the month before or whatever, I'm going to push back against it too. But that doesn't mean that I'm right and, you know, the DeJoy is wrong, right? I mean,
but that's the reason why I set up the business analogy at the very beginning, right? I mean, I've sat in that chair where I've had to go in and reduce expenses relatively quickly because that would have been the thing that facilitated my hire, right? So I'm not discounting that. What I was trying to do was to make sure that I had applied the principle that the post office is not a business. It's a government function. And so the setup that I was trying to make was, in this situation, it seems like we're saying it's appropriate to look at what's happening in the post office today and to make some changes that may cause it to be different tomorrow. But then when we have a similar conversation about the various roles of law enforcement, all of a sudden that infers that we're not supporting the police.
No, because I
think that there's some things that can be performed.
That's not fair. Right? Because if you came in and said, hey, Sean, we should look at inefficiencies in police departments, let's look at them. If there's somebody who could come in and say, hey, you know what, they're doing this twice when they only need to do it once, or they're doing that, you know, we should allocate more money here, reduce it, more training here, but we're not going to send them twice a year to this conference or something like that, then I'd say, yeah, let's right-size it. Let's make sure we're not wasting taxpayer dollars on it. So I find it similar between the two, my opinions on the two, not distinctly different. And also, you mentioned the post office boxes. Those pictures have been thrown up on Twitter and elsewhere on the internet, and everybody is going, look at that. That's an example of them taking these. But this is stuff that has happened with some systemic regularity in the post office, even before DeJoy was there.
Sure.
Heck, it happened during former President Obama's terms. I mean, so the picture goes up and people say, like, Trump has gotten on the phone and the president said, go out there and get all those post office boxes out there so people can't get ballots in to vote against me. Come on.
But, Sean, that was the reason why I was saying it wasn't like it was a plan that was written down with an objective. But the part that you end up missing in this particular advocacy that you're making is it's not like the president hasn't been talking about the problems, potential problems, in quotes, associated with mail-in / absentee voting, right? And trying to create the narrative that somehow it is tantamount to trying to create a fraudulent situation that would somehow overturn his, quote, inevitable win.
All right.
So when you put the two things together, it's not like anyone's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. simply not the case.
Democrats in Washington are bringing this up for the same thing, for an insurance policy when Biden loses, to have all the reasons Biden lost. And I want to go back here for a second and address this idea of the insurance policy. So I want to address, though, for a second, the idea that this is this discussion of mail-in voting and the pitfalls in this is completely new. You talked about the president talk about it. I was thinking about the interviews I've had with Dr. Yatsenyak. We look back. You can look in our podcast archive as far back as April with this discussion that it's out there.
Wow.
I think, you know, and his research that he did, he started in 2008 and filed his paper in 2011. He's a dean at the University of South Alabama. Well before Trump was even a discussion, he filed this about the pitfalls of mail-in voting. And in our discussions, my discussions with Dr. Yatsenyak, we've talked about Republicans have had this on them as much, you know, and Democrats too. And then sometimes it's not even benefited either side. It's just they screwed it up with these mail-in ballots. So the fact that the president, now, does he take it and use it for political effect? Sure he does, the same way the Democrats are. But let's get to the truth of what's happening. Do you think the U.S. Post Office needs reform at all? Or you think it's fine, it should be given more money and no reform?
Sean, you just threw a shiny object. So let me address the first part of what you did, and then I'll come back and answer your question. So the first part of what you did was you referenced this PhD dean at the University of South Alabama. I have heard him on your show a number of times, and I think that the presentation that he's given on face, it's almost prima facie, right? It's hard to even argue with it. But what it does is it communicates this kind of convergence of two separate things. Either the argument is that it is fraudulent, and we know there have been cases with absentee ballots, particularly when you talk about ballot harvesting, where individuals on both sides of the aisle have been held accountable for that. Okay, so we'll grant that right off the bat. That has happened. The number of times it's happened and the number of elections that were ultimately overturned, I believe, is fairly small when you talk about the people who were convicted of that. Be that as it may, the counter argument, which is the one that was made that I actually think is more substantive, is that people aren't filling those ballots out with enough proficiency to ensure they don't make mistakes. And so that could potentially create a situation where individuals are disenfranchised because, for example, they didn't sign the outside of the envelope, or they stuck two ballots in at the same time and tried to meld them together as opposed to mailing them separately.
Yeah, you heard the stat.
Those are two completely different arguments.
Yeah, but it affects, and those, and I think we can hopefully agree on those things. I mean, we rolled out the stats Dalton did yesterday out in Nevada, out of Clark County, and, you know, there were Democrats affected by this. There were, I think it's 56,000 Republicans affected by it, 70-something thousand independents. So,
this
is a lot of people, and this is showing, is that not true? When I hear from the pundits out there, or I hear from elected members in Congress that are Democrats saying there's no evidence of mail-in voting having any problems out there, it's BS.
But both things can't be true, right? Argument can't be that you believe it's fraudulent when the examples and stats that you're giving
It can be both. We detailed that in the conversation with Dr. Yatsenyak, that we talked about both types because, you know, I'm interested in trying to get the real truth instead of just sticking with the fraudulent part. And we talked about the fraudulent cases and the busts that have been made on that. And he pointed out that it's not factual, but you can think if whatever it is, it's tax evasion, whatever it is, you say, well, they caught this number of people, they didn't catch everybody. You know, they even talk about in the stats, they apprehended this many people coming across the southern border, and they even have a formula there that said that means this number of people came across the border. So the idea that it's just the people that were convicted on this, that represents a small part of what could be a lot larger on the nefarious side. But then I also transition, because I'm trying to get to truth, and I'm trying to get to reforms not based on who's in the White House, and talk about the other problems out there that are not based on what president person you want to have president, just inefficiencies and this system that Nancy Pelosi seems hell-bent to bring to the nation right away before November is fraught with pitfalls.
Well, Sean, this goes back to what we were talking about at the global issue with regards to voting. As a general rule, we as a society should be trying to make it easier to vote, not harder to vote, once you're able to confirm that the right person is voting in the right location with the right ballot, right? So you and I agree on that. And so the thing that I kept coming back to, which is the reason why I believe the professor who testified is actually supporting the argument that I'm making, is that you can increase the accuracy of the mail-in ballot through your public service announcements, through your training, through your doing it more often. I was an absentee ballot guy, right, for 13 years of my life. I did that when I wasn't able to vote here in Alabama when I was in the military. And I got better at it over time. Right?
And absentees are different than mail-in. And, I mean, that's a different thing, right? I mean,
that is correct. So Absentee ballots are different than mail ballots. Absentee ballots are requested. Mail-in ballots are pushed out into
push versus pull. Yep.
Right. So. Push versus pull. And so the point that I was trying to make was on the proficiency of filling it out line item, right? So there's a way to increase that proficiency, and you increase it by doing it more, not doing it less.
Can we do that by November 3rd? Can we get that fixed by November 3rd?
Oh, there's no way. You don't have enough time distance, right? So this is the same thing that we were talking about, drive-in voting, you know, when you and I were talking about that for the runoff. But the point is, you always have to do it the first time. There's always a first time. And there are states where this has actually been happening already.
Sure.
And so what my challenge to you is, and to the listening audience, was the notion that the desire to do mail-in voting as an augmentation to absentee voting is in and of itself nefarious. And I just don't think that's the case.
All right, coming right back. You've got to go. We are way, way, way late. But we'll go to the break. Come right back. More with Robert Kennedy Jr. right here on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings. Back to conversation with Robert Kennedy Jr. We'll have to have more Postal Service and mail-in voting conversations soon, because I've got just a couple minutes here, and I want to get your reaction so far to the DNC virtual convention.
It's been very interesting, right? Watching it in this new format without the crowds there and actually getting that crowd reaction. And then, you know, some of the handoffs have been a little clunky, right? So it's kind of like we're in a new world and we're having to get our heads around it. But when you actually get to the substance of what has been communicated, first during the roll call vote when Vice President Biden was elected, and then just the lineup from last night, I think that they nailed it in terms of communicating what they wanted to communicate to the audience, right? So when you talk about, you know, Hillary Clinton coming out of the gate, you know, Barack Obama doing the warm-up, and then Kamala Harris kind of bringing it home, I think they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish last night.
I wonder if, just side note here, we will never know what's in people's minds and hearts, but if Hillary looks over at Joe Biden and says, You? Not me, you?
Well, I doubt that. I think if it had been some of the other folks in the scrum that was this year's primary process, she may have, but I don't think she's doing it with Vice President Biden.
Do you think Kamala Harris as VP has helped the Biden ticket, neutral, or hurt it?
Well, I think that it has helped for the reasons that we discussed here a couple of weeks ago, because of those areas, particularly within the African-American demographic in the Midwest, that you have the opportunity of increasing the turnout among that segment. And that's the thing that I think is the most helpful with her candidacy.
There we go. We'll pick this conversation up next week. We appreciate your time. Robert, we'll talk soon.
You guys have a good week and stay dry.
All right, will do. So Robert Kennedy Jr. joining us, and as we continue our discussion with people named Rob or Bobby, Bob Holbert from Landiap joins us coming up next. New issue out on the streets now. Talk to him about his column, the new issue, and his take maybe on this post office thing. He'll say, do just like we do. We deliver the papers ourselves, right? That's probably where he'll go. Right. Let's do this. We've got our buddy Rob Holbert holding on. We're going to get to him in just a second, though. Some news, I guess, breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
Always want to make sure that it meets the level of breaking news before I say it, because it seems cliche. But this one, so Steve Bannon, right? You know Steve Bannon, of course, from Breitbart. You know Steve Bannon from his work on the Trump campaign. News out this morning, he has been indicted by federal prosecutors in Manhattan.
Yeah, charged with one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering. And I guess in the filings there, they wrote Bannon through a nonprofit organization under his control, quote unquote nonprofit one, which I guess they've written there in the copy, received over $1 million from We Build the Wall, at least some of which Bannon used to cover hundreds of thousands of dollars in his personal expenses. So that's what's going on right now in Steve Bannon's life.
So wonder the story behind the people bringing the suit there. So as federal court bringing the suit against Bannon, I'm sure there'll be a lot more information coming out today on that, but that's just something that just came across the wire there. And maybe we'll get instant reaction from our buddy Rob Holbert at Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Did you get any big million-dollar checks, Rob, recently?
I'd rather not say. I think it would. your signal does not go to New York, does it?
No, it didn't. Well, on the interwebs.
I've gotten plenty.
Okay, good. Good deal. Yeah, a lot to talk about. New issue of Lanyap out now. And tell me about the cover photo. What's going on there?
Well, we're talking about what's going on downtown, just about the struggles downtown. Obviously there's struggles everywhere, but in particular, we talk about, downtown has 60 plus restaurants that are all trying to get back online. You've got lots of, it's a center for where a lot of businesses are located, a lot of office space. And, still right now, that's really been an issue for everybody. We talk about businesses. Restaurants coming back and the restrictions on restaurants and how many people they can have there. A lot of these guys are saying, those restrictions are bad, but we don't have enough people to worry about it anyway. There's just not enough folks coming in. There's some interesting things in this story. They're talking about the RSA Tower basically being a ghost town in terms of people being there. That's not saying that nobody's renting. There's nobody leaving their leases yet, but there's a lot of discussion about, will people move leases? Will they change them to smaller places? Will they continue to telecommute? But there are some things that are positives. Visit Mobile folks said that they are on pace for their third best year for future bookings for next year. So that's positive. In terms of tax revenue, June in Mobile actually was an increase of $2.6 million over last year. A lot of that, believe it or not, was driven by grocery and home improvement stores. Yeah, hard to believe, right? And also the people going out and spending their $1,200 checks. So there are some things there it's kind of a mixed bag, but what we're talking about is, where are we in terms of people coming back? And, a big part, a lot of it, I think the big danger downtown, I think, is restaurants. You look at people who are really stretched thin at this point, and we've spent years and years and years trying to build this community up downtown to get it to where it was. And to lose a lot of restaurants would be a real step back.
Yeah, but how do you solve that? Because you're talking about the commercial real estate. I'm looking around to commercial, while residential is popping, you look at the mortgage rates out there running that, but commercial real estate, even not in a super big metro, a place like Mobile, they're going to be people probably that get used to a new work model that don't have the same number of physical, desk and cubicles and office space.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. I don't know what the solution is to it. It's I think one of the solutions, at least, not a solution, but at least a something people can do to help is, go eat at their favorite restaurant. Don't just get, so terrified of going out and doing something that they don't go out and support those restaurants that they, especially, ones that you want to see when this is over. If there's some place that you really love, then go support them. I think that's a big part of what we can do as just consumers these days.
I like that. Now, some of the client base is going to be reduced for those bars and restaurants and things downtown would be members of the Mobile City Council, because they're doing it from the house.
They're doing it from the house. Yeah, they went back virtual this week. I've written it and I said last week, I don't think it's a good look. I don't think it's a good, I don't think it shows the right leadership. And I'd say that based upon what they claimed as their reasons for doing so. When they did it, the claims were, hey, COVID is skyrocketing. And, you know, at the same time, they were told, no, it's actually going down in our community. But, you know, the underlying issues, at least from what we've heard now, is kind of, well, you know, hey, there are people on the council who have some underlying health issues, or there's people who are older, and, you know, so we're a little more worried about that kind of stuff, which maybe that makes a little more sense, but I think that that should have been expressed if that's the reason for it, and not let's hang it on something that isn't really even accurate.
Do you think that there might be some comedic relief as citizens get to have their virtual square box in that Zoom meeting from their house, and Lord knows what could happen in the background?
Well, I think it shows when you've got all the city council people at home, and then the city employees who are zooming in are in their offices. It kind of says, you know, what I was saying about it in the first place. It's not great leadership to say, we're the city council, we're going to go home, the rest of you go work.
Go work, yeah.
You know, I get it. I mean, I do get it if you say, hey, you know, Fred's in his late 70s, you know, or, you know, there are people who've had health issues on the council. I get that, but I think you have to say that if that's your real reason for it. You can't hide behind a made up situation and say, well, it's getting worse out there right now, you know, right after the mayor and the health department say it's improving, and they say, well, it's getting worse, we got to go back to virtual meetings. It's just not really very true, and it doesn't really seem to be it's not a great way to do things, in my opinion.
And Rob, Mayor Stimson's done such a good job with that nightly newsletter, that email newsletter that he sends out, kind of laying out why we've had some good news over the last few weeks. Has he commented yet on the city council moving back to virtual?
I don't think he's made a big comment about it. I think that's up to them. It's just the look that they want. But I mean, to me, we're trying to get people to come back down to work and trying to get people to go out and resume life. I think that should be the goal, right? I mean, it should be what we want to do, I think, I hope, or where we hope things will end up. You know, I'm sure there are lots of people who say, no, the goal should be to stay at home right now. We should just stay at home. But, you know, again, if things are getting better, we can't just let everything rot on the vine.
There you go. Coming right back, more of Rob Holbert from Landnap, landnapmobile.com. A couple other stories here that I want to get into. And also, it's, I think, two weeks in a row, Rob's talking football in his Dan the Torpedoes column, which I think is a good thing.
I like it.
Let's encourage it when we get back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Continue our conversation with Rob Holbert from Landnap, landnapmobile.com, which is, well, I tell you what, I'll get directions for you for both things. So if you want to go pick up a copy, a paper copy, you're a Luddite, you're an old school person, where do they find copies of Landnap?
Look for the purple box, man. Look for the pink and purple boxes out there. That's the best place. Grocery stores, places like that, that's where we're, you know, big moving places, you know, the places where we move lots of papers, we kept them there. But the boxes are really where we've really stacked them up in there, so folks can look for their favorite box locally.
You ever see any fraud surrounding Landnap? Any kind of mail-in voting fraud or anything like that?
I hope so. We're working on it.
And then the other side, the omnipresent
fraud. The other side of it is go online at landnapmobile.com. Check us out there. And if you're not a subscriber, become one. You're missing stuff all week long if you're not. And we have a new e-edition, basically, which is a PDF reader. You read the paper just like it appears in print, but you can zoom in, folks. Those of us like me who have failing eyesight, you can really zoom in and make it big. It's great for reading on the computer, and you don't have to worry about squinting anymore.
Yeah, all of us
darn readers, even
all of us in the 20-point font club enjoy that. Yes.
I want the giant, you know, the end of the war type font.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about the discussion around, you got the election going on, Sims. People are talking about this annexation issue. Sims can just annex Mobile.
Well, that's an interesting thing in the story that we have this week. You know, talking about the guys running for mayor, there's a discussion about, you know, one of them is basically saying, hey, you know, I think we need to annex as much around us as we can. And you have another one saying, we're not ready to do that yet. But again, it goes back to the whole issue in Mobile of should Mobile annex, and do we need to have annexation in that area? Something I firmly believe we do. If it brings in more money, it makes zero sense to me not to annex those areas. But, you know, at the time we were having this discussion, you know, a few months back, people are saying, well, you know, Sims might do that. But you've got mayoral candidates running out there basically saying, this is what we're running on. I want to annex this area. And, you know, Mobile needs to really pay attention to that. Those council members who are anti-annexation vote, I should say, really need to pay attention to that, because it's a reality. There's really an opportunity there to lose that growth area, that growth corridor.
Well, yeah, the decision would be made once and for all if it's annexed into Sims. Yeah. It takes it off. It's not that, well, maybe down the road it'll be right time. Yep. That'll be a done thing.
Yep, it will. And it's, you know, it just would be foolish, in my opinion. I mean, when we look at it, where's the growth in the city? Where's been the tremendous growth in this city has been out west? If, you know, all those of us who can take the Wayback Machine back 10, 15 years can remember what that area was like, it's just exploded. And, you know, what's it going to be like in 20 more years? I think we'd look back and say, man, it was dumb not to annex this area.
All right. And before we wrap up, in the new Damn the Torpedoes column and the new issue of Landnap, I don't know which of the paragraphs got my attention most. Probably, there's so many, but I mean, like this sentence: in the pantheon of risky college behaviors, COVID so far is way behind the four horsemen of casual sex, drinking and driving, taking drugs, and chugging alcohol. That got my attention.
Well, it is. I mean, I think, and this basically what you're looking at, the number of people who have died of COVID in Alabama under the age of 24 is one. There's one person who has died from that, you know, and we're acting like these people going back to school, everybody's going berserk about it. The kids are going to get sick and kids are going to die. That cohort has not shown itself to be particularly susceptible to COVID. Meanwhile, the one that is, the over 65, which makes up almost 80% of the deaths in the state, you know, we're not making people that age do anything differently, but we're basically saying to the folks who are in the group that aren't dying from it, that they're going to have to sacrifice these years of their lives to this, or this year of their life, which for a lot of people, it's a big deal. It is a big deal if you're a high school senior playing football and you have opportunities beyond that, that maybe you don't get those opportunities because of this. And, you know, that's just the point I'm making. There's more to it than just, oh, football's dumb and, you know, people are going to get sick playing football. I mean, they're checking these kids every single day. They're probably being checked. I'm sure they're being checked way more than they would be at home.
And Rob, God bless the SEC for standing strong to this point and saying they're going to put on a season, even with limited capacity. But something I find hilarious with these other conferences that have canceled football for this fall, they're still going to allow their teams to go out and practice and work out together for 12 hours a week. So not safe enough to play games, but safe enough to have students on campus for the most part, and safe enough to have those players go practice. It doesn't make much sense in parts of the rest of the country.
Well, then it fits right in with a lot of what we're doing. If it makes no sense, then it's perfect. I think that's where we are with a lot of things. It's just things that don't make sense, let's do that.
Here it is, the guiding principle coming from Rob Holmer. Appreciate it, man. We will check back with you next week.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right. We'll do Rob Holmer with Landnap, landnapmobile.com. And we're about to step out. Jeff Poore's about to step in. Jeff Poore Show, week 3. He's darn near completing week three.
Mm-hmm. He's got another list of great guests coming on today.
And if you're not following me on Twitter, I put something cryptic out on Twitter, specifically cryptic, and I'll let you know that we mentioned it. Well, I've been mentioning it for a couple of weeks, but a big announcement coming. Think tomorrow, maybe, you think?
Yeah, we should do it tomorrow.
We'll probably talk about that tomorrow. It's really exciting stuff happening here at FM Talk 106.5. If I can keep it together through the day today and not tell y'all, then we'll do it tomorrow. All right, so Jeff's on the way. I'll be back at noon for Midday Mobile.